a first test of those perhaps ill-advised house rules. Anyway, yeah, they went right ahead and did it. Conceptual means they just didn't have it in writing at the time, but they meant to get it in writing between that point
and
this point.
Where do you see it in the summary, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, it's the boldface material.
I thought that they were, my understanding was, and my understanding was that they were not going to do it until I had a chance to check with the industry and check with some people, because it just popped up at the last hearing.
Trying to find it.
If it isn't in there, please don't put it in there.
No, it doesn't give us a nice roadmap.
Why did they want to do that?
I don't know.
I can explain that. I can explain what was said. There are a lot of boards and commissions in commerce now, and when people think about pieces of commerce, they assume that there's a lot of them. There is only one really here, and there is a problem with it. There is a problem with the bank board. It doesn't have enough to do.
There it is. A. and Gross Bill, page 29, lines 3 through 6. Removes the governor and inserts the director, basically, in terms of the appointing authority.
That's more conceptual, I think. That's substantial.
So what's the governor's position on that?
I tried not to bring that subject up to him.
Imagine it was actually a reminding of the Port of Porkinville. Yeah. Traded off.
It isn't something we proposed. Okay.
Yeah. This is the cool and got you, man.
Well,
this was Phillips?
Well, and you see, and I said to them, My understanding of the situation is this. At some time in the future, please not now, you should either expand the bank board to include these other areas, give it some duties, or abolish it. But please don't do it now, because it'll just bog this bill down in a lot of stuff about who appoints and all that other business. Leave it alone and come back in 2 years and do something with it after you've thought about it. And I think that's what the industry's saying, and I think that's what that committee, the other Representative Jolin committee, is saying, and it's what I'm urging again, is I don't want to fight this war. It's a little tiny issue that could screw up a major policy piece.
Somebody, Mr. Chairman, ought to have a word for the feeling that people get who are in the legislature when they hear that, when they think, well, I may not be here at that.
Yeah.
So
right.
Why don't we do it now? There ought to be some short word for that.
Fear. We'll give it a try, I think. The sentiment of the subcommittee would probably be that this is not a step you'd wish to take in a reorganization bill such as this. But I do need to warn you that my sense of House politics is going to be this is when that little House rule about ways and means altering substantive committees could well be challenged. I could go ahead and get the chairman of the committee to agree, and then I can bet there'd be a certain member who might rise and to a point of order and ask the ruling of the chair on you.
That must have been a Senate bill that Representative Jolin was working his magic on Friday.
That was a House bill, but he wasn't. Actually, the House committee had done all that stuff.
That was legal.
He'd gone and gotten the committee to do it.
Oh, that's
substantive. Yeah. I missed that.
I've been around longer than that.
So we'll have to try to work with that. Perhaps somebody can talk to Representative Phillips. I don't know.
Well, maybe I could. I will do that myself in any event and see if we can. I know the legislature takes as long as it takes to do whatever it does, but I have a feeling that somehow dealing with that little issue might take longer than what to build this department.
Yes, exactly. Okay, sorry to get you all distracted.
I was making the point that this director has a great deal of authority to organize and reorganize and move staff and so forth, and that is an important part of this concept. Now,
you meant within the range of insurance, financial institutions, and workers' comp, right? That's contained here. The authorities in former Department of Commerce functions aren't.
Right. We couldn't do any of that in commerce right now. I might have money over here, and I couldn't borrow it or do anything with it. There's still limits on the regular limits, but I want to emphasize for you, this is not a duplication of commerce. It is a new merged department, as if you were building it this way for the first time. Now, in addition, we've proposed in the technical amendments that there be a single account, even though the funds are dedicated, you know, just like the general fund has some dedicated accounts in it. We propose a single cash account, a single financing system for this one department with the bookkeeping that you back it up to keep them separate. Otherwise, if we go around continuing the existing series in the various places in which the statute, we end up with a financial muddle and about twice as much paperwork as we would have if we start out as if we were writing it from the first place. I know that at one point representatives from industries were concerned about that and puzzled about it, and I said, well, I'll get it on the table for you. I think we've satisfied everybody's concerns, but I want you to think about it too and not be surprised when you see it in the legislation.
Whereabouts is that?
In addition to that, I want to...
Where is
Section 17? Section 17. 17? Yeah, sorry. That was one we were working on.
Page 5.
In addition, we're running right at one of your traditions, and you will either like it or you won't like it. This account, because it represents fees paid by industries and so forth, is built on the assumption that we can retain the interest or not in that account.
Well, at least you were upfront about it. We didn't have to hunt.
No, it's there, and if you don't like it, you got to amend it.
I don't like it.
Well, workers' comp already does and is built on that basis.
And take that away, too.
Please, please don't. You'll undo the world.
Senator Hanna.
I think that this is one of those cases when if we're going to consolidate these three, it may in fact be a situation where we are going to have to do that for the simple logistical reason of the account that's going to be created, the method of which that account is going to be operational. Because it is, in fact, a case where workers' comp does maintain that interest now. And all due respect, I think that's something that we should seriously look at on this committee, but I think we should understand the reason why it's just not going to a different philosophy.
But this insurance and finance fund, you're saying that set up in Section 17 would also include workers' comp? We'll have to find that later. Anyway, Gary, he did point out, grab the interest here off of the insurance and finance fund.
Right. Goes to the fund, not to the general.
Right. Yeah, that's what we wanted to do. And as I say, my purpose is not to get you bogged down that debate now, but to let you know where the policy choices are, and that's one that I know is inconsistent with your traditions in some areas, but I don't think it is here.
Representative Shipwreck, you care to join us?
Just listening.
Were you here when we talked about what your committee did?
Maybe I should have.
Yeah.
You ever hear of the bank board?
Well, now explain this. The dollars that come into the financial institution division, to whom does the interest accrue?
Financial institutions division.
To the general fund?
Right now, it's accruing to the general fund.
Yes.
With passage of this, it would go to financial institutions.
I see.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things, not to downplay what Stan has said about the advantages of a combined account, but I think there is an advantage that he hasn't mentioned, that is there isn't enough cash for some of these organizations to function. And that's a fundamental reason for building a single account, is that you can keep your financial institutions moving by using the insurance division's cash till the financial institution's cash comes in. You couldn't do that before.
It's, and under, you, Gary, you got to say that in a way with some limitations on it. Otherwise, you set off people's alarm buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Most people do not understand the difference between cash flow and ownership of the money. Mm-hmm. This is just like a grain elevator where you put in 50 bushels and he puts in 50 and I put in 50. You still own the 50, but when I take it out, I may take it in a different order than you put it in.
But bushels of grain don't draw interest.
Well, there's two different questions.
Right.
There's two different questions. Right now, if I have to run financial institutions division, I'm going to be borrowing money waiting for the next set of receipts. In a given fiscal period, if I can draw out of a single account like most modern companies do, I got to monitor it and so forth. I will not have to borrow that money because I can use some on-hand cash. It's not using their money; it's using grain out of the elevator in the order in which I need it.
Well, sort of the way this subcommittee has used the barbers and hairdressers fund.
No, that's different.
Not really.
Abused it or used it?
Mr. Chairman, the interest would continue to accrue because you've got an interest accruing accounting system for each one of those subcategories, and so it's going to continue to accrue. But it is insurance money comes in, it may have to be used for financial institutions.
A dollar is a dollar, and once it's in that bank account, it doesn't make any difference whether you put it in or I put it in there. You're still entitled to it. I may have your dollar. And then you'll have mine.
Representative Jones, and then Senator Wires. Representative Jones, the analogy made. Go ahead.
Well, but if you can keep your cash flow going with the interest off of it, then the next session, maybe you can reduce the fees.
Yeah.
Then you will raise the fees next time.
My favorite exercise so far has been on financial institutions division. I want to tell you how close the line we are. This doesn't have any fee increases in it. We scaled from 42 or 43 positions down to 27 or 8 in order to not impose any fee increases and stay with the funds that we had. We are so close. I mean, we're pinching this thing as tight as any human being can, and I've said to the industry people, we may be back mid, something doesn't go right, we may be back mid term with an adjustment. If we didn't do this, if we hadn't proposed this kind of an accounting system and these reductions, we would be in a significant fee increase on an industry that's in big trouble and doesn't need it. So we need this bill.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problem giving them that as long as we've got control of the fees, and so they don't build up a surplus in the way they're, and it's just a simple way of doing business from my standpoint. Next time around, if they've got too damn much money, we can reduce the fees and everybody will benefit.
Okay.
Okay.
General Myers.
Your bushels of grain analogy, I've got to think a minute to think of another analogy, but analogies aside, the money hits some account, and when it gets there, it's immediately put into some kind of a short-term interest-bearing status, isn't it?
Should be. Well, could be.
What's happening now?
This doesn't exist now.
Well, this account doesn't exist now, but the money that you're getting from insurance, you've got an account that exists now. And
yeah,
I assume that's an interest-bearing account.
Well, but it's what the state treasurer does, and I don't know for sure, Senator Wires, exactly what he does with short-term money. I really don't.
Well,
with long-term money, I know it's invested.
Please let us know, and if he isn't drawing interest on it, I'm going to be very surprised. So, if you take that money and divert it over to pay some other obligations in some other activity temporarily, from the day you move that money over there, you lose interest.
But the program doesn't necessarily. When we reconcile accounts, so to speak, each one of the program areas will get what they're entitled to, just like you get your grain out of the elevator. And the reason why is, well, maybe there's one more fact that I didn't emphasize.
Again, grain doesn't earn interest.
But it's ascertainable.
Grain, in fact, is going broke, so you've got to, it devaluates while it's in the elevator.
It's ascertainable what it is that you're entitled to.
Yes,
and the problem that you're addressing,
principle
and interest, the problem is that you get money from financial institutions, divisions, operations, for example, twice a year, I think.
Once a year is a big payment.
Yeah, one big payment and then a smaller one. We'll have to raise fees enormously.
Now, don't, you're changing the subject.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. We're talking about the burden that's placed on that money, not your very strong argument here that you're going to have to raise fees if we don't give you this change.
Well, let me state it affirmatively instead of negatively. If FID borrows money from insurance funds, and I use the word borrow in an improper sense here, it will repay the money plus interest at whatever the treasurer earns when it reconciles accounts, Senator Waters. It won't cost insurance either the principal or interest.
You're saying then from the time it comes in, mm-hmm. even though a financial institution is using money, there'll be an accounting procedure that will say how much money came in, and whatever interest would have been earned if the money had not been spent somewhere else would be paid, right, as though the money were there and out of interest.
We take $100,000. When we reconcile accounts, if it was for 1 year, we return $108 or $110 from program A to program B.
Then what will pay the interest? Then the interest will be paid by the donee part of your fund.
It will be paid by the program that needed to help with its cash flow. Yes.
But by doing that, you're going to reduce the overall amount of cash you've got to bring in order to make these funds work.
It's only a question of timing.
Senator Hannon?
Well, he used the same analogy on PRS. You take all the employees, they all pay in each month. I have so much money in my account. PRS is using that money continually to pay somebody else's retirement or a lump sum settlement whenever they quit. That may come out of my current cash flow that's going in that particular month. However, I'm still accruing the interest in the interest bearing in that particular account. I think that's the analogy you're trying to
lay out. When they pay off for somebody retiring, the money will then be gone. The fund,
half of it's
gone. Whatever amount they pay out to the person is gone, and you're not going to continue to draw interest on it.
That was that amount of money that person would have lost. Same way as this, if somebody pulled their license, or not even paying in, that would be money that would be lost regardless. As long as they're receiving the income coming in each month, it's just a cash flow. It's just a paper shift.
That's right. That's right.
Nobody is losing anything. Nobody's gaining anything. It's still a status quo. It's just that you're shifting on accounting paper how much money is coming in and how it has to be moved over to different things.
There is one little gain that's incidental to being able to do this. If we were to go borrow from the general fund or from the hairdressers, heaven forbid, it would take X amount of time to do that, to accomplish that transaction, and we'd pay interest for those days. When we do it ourselves this way, it's shorter and faster and cheaper. We don't have the loan cost, so to speak.
If this is just a matter of cash flow, then what is the argument for your retaining the earnings on it, on the insurance part?
Because there are a couple. The biggest piece in terms of dollars and employees is set up that way now. trying to change that would be a major overhaul and a shift in cost.
That's workers' comp.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying, what I'm getting at is, if these are all just matters of keeping track of things, why can't you keep separate the earnings that would have been made on the part that's not workers' comp?
We could.
We could.
There's no question about that. We proposed it this way because the bigger piece is that way and needs to stay that way in our judgment. Secondly, it is a way of providing a little bit of relief to the industry. I mean, it's, you know, that's got enough problems. I wouldn't want to go to a bank or right now a state charter bank and raise their fees. I've done a lot to not do that. And we've built this program on the basis of interest earnings. If you take it away, we'll have to do something different. And yes, you could. It's just an accounting problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, God knows we don't need it in the general fund.
That's not true. It really isn't. We're still looking at that ending balance in 79 as being an important number to keep as large as possible without regard to kickers and limits and all of that, because we're heading into that recession that's officially projected for mid-89 and may move up because the interest rates sure are. Anyway, yeah, we care about the general fund jealously.
I assume so, and it's on the table for you to look at.
Okay. Other highlights. Well, I should just mention, since it's close to time we'll be leaving, is there anyone here from the public who wishes to testify in this budget? Okay, go ahead.
Other
highlights before we do that is we get the cost to the general fund of this change.
Mr. Weeks will work that out.
Please understand, and this is another commonly asked question, where is the power? Where's the power going to reside over the programs? And let me explain that question. Right now, inside knowledgeable people understand that the insurance commissioner's powers are in the commissioner, even though I appoint the commissioner. I mean, the power is there, not in the director. In this organization, consistent with the other things I've talked to you about, the power is in the director. As if, you know, just like you were creating the department for the first time, we're pulling the administrator's power from FID and the commissioner's power and so forth and putting them in the director. They'll undoubtedly will be delegations, but they may be practical and day-to-day, or they may be legal. All right, pawnbrokers.
Senator Hannon requests we discuss that tomorrow. He's interested, too.
Okay.
Okay.
That's probably the next logical piece. Do you want to break now, or do you want me to talk about, answer questions, or
probably see if there's any questions left. If not, we can break. Mr. Weeks, any issue you wanted to flag? Except putting out pawnbrokers.
Pawnbrokers, Mr. Chairman. I think there are some other things. Once Mr. Long finishes his testimony, we could go into two. You may need to talk a little bit with him about your future schedule, because I think he's indicated some problems.
Oh, yeah. We wanted to kind of march through this in the next couple of days.
I am, and so is the insurance commissioner and the secretary of state, are on the road Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Tomorrow I have hearings in front of Senator Hill on 10:34 in the afternoon.
At 3 or?
1 o'clock. I can adjust my schedule and I can be here, although the insurance commissioner can't, Thursday at 1 or 1:30 at your convenience. Or Friday. But tomorrow afternoon I'm in another committee, and Wednesday I'm out of town.
Yeah, we are. We can just, you know, forget the bill. What the heck? I mean, there's no problem with that. We've got other things to do. We sort of put the whole thing up till whenever they're ready.
What would you like? When would you?
August.
It'll be a little late. If we did not have these scheduling problems, when would you want to hear the bill?
Tomorrow and the next day. We have things like 24-hour notices that we have to give. Are you the only knowledgeable person about pawnbrokers?
I can do pawnbrokers in about 3 or 4 minutes if you want to do it.
Well, no, Senator Hannah wanted to talk about it. I don't know what he had.
We're going to have to come back to this anyway.
Yeah. Can't avoid it. There's not enough to talk about tomorrow, then, with...
It's just that I can't be here, and neither and my staff are going to be in Senator Hill's committee unless I can move it. And the last time I suggested a change, that was denied. So...
No, and that's the other part of the reorganization.
Yeah, it's the other.
They finally decided to hear it. It's been sitting in their committee for how long?
We've had 2 hearings. This is the third.
Yeah. Well, Gary, I don't know what to do. We posted it. You would take a day away from a Ways and Means subcommittee at the end of the session. Is what the effect of that would be? Because we can't schedule anything else. So you would end the sub.
I will absent myself from those public meetings if the governor asked that I attend and do it on Wednesday, if that'll help. I mean,
no, tomorrow's the problem. It's too late to hear about it.
Chairman, there is no one on your staff that can discuss pawnbrokers other than yourself.
Oh, no, that's not a problem. No, someone else can do it.
What else were we going to talk about?
Well, we could just go right ahead and, well, we're going to presumably start hearing from Fiscal on their recommendations. As we begin the work session, this.
Yeah, there may be more that you have more testimony in this. I mean, we haven't, Mr. Chairman, we haven't talked yet about the accident prevention division, how that would come into play here, or workers' comp, really.
Mm-hmm.
Could Mr. Brown perhaps give that portion of it, relate to how that would come into the whole picture and so on?
You schedule it, somebody will be here. I mean, okay. My preference is to be here myself for obvious reasons, and if that can't be arranged, then we'll have to live with what you do.
I really don't have any choice. I can't have someone come up after I've scheduled, after the 24-hour notice. If you come in earlier and identify that as a problem, I'd be flexible, but I can't be.
Just so I understand, is tomorrow the problem or when?
Tomorrow's a problem. I can handle something when I'm not bound by a 24-hour rule.
The only issue tomorrow is the pawnbroker issue.
Well, that, and we can begin to work session this budget because we got other budgets to do. Good Lord, we have waited since what, February? As I thought, a great courtesy. Then we pried the thing out of a House committee to get it down here so we could hear it, and now we got some senator who wants to jerk us around. So. That's what I feel about it.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we've kind of got our orders here. We'll be here till August. So we're not on the count. We're going to make a decision on any case. And I'm ready to make it.
Yeah. Well, so we'll just come on back. Here tomorrow.
We can go ahead and schedule. We've got public hearing work session, and we can hear from whoever Mr. Long would like to have continue. It seems like you should hear as much of this picture as possible. I think you've only really had discussion about the insurance division, the financial institution division. I don't think you've got the third part of this package, which is a sizable portion of the package, and someone ought to be able to discuss that, give you a general presentation.
We'll see what happens then.
1:30 tomorrow?
1:30 tomorrow.
One of us will be here.
Okay, good. We're adjourned. In a pawnbroker type role and may also be fences. And get it fixed up kind of right instead of doing it at the last minute, if you don't mind.
Would you consider giving us some relief from the investigation of complaints and not raising the fees on these 13 small businesses and not.
Well, but and just so then somebody calls and complains, and then what do you tell them? Well, the legislature told us that we didn't have to do that anymore, so we're not going to respond to your complaint. Then they'll call us, I bet.
Well, amend the Unlawful Trade Practices Act and make it a violation of the consumer protection laws, and they can complain to the Department of Justice or seek relief themselves with attorney fees and all the process that's there. It really is a consumer issue in many respects. I mean, that's a reasonable thing to do, and it's a short kind of an amendment.
Well, we ought to do that anyway. My bias is bigger than my chair on this, but it seems to me that you create a statutory cause of action in situations where fraud can be shown. It's a good idea, but that's only one piece of the whole thing. But then if Representative Senator Hannon found something, I guess he can't bring an independent action that right now. He could for a conversion or something.
That's about it. And of course, the thing that really has the teeth is the violation of the federal firearms. Of course, I believe it to be a felony.
But on the other heirlooms that aren't guns, he's always got a conversion action, which you've got to prove higher standard proof than the.
And then you got that common law wrestling match about whether you have to pay the person who dealt with the thief. That case has been around a long time. You know, one other suggestion to make is a letter from this committee, from the Public Safety Subcommittee Ways and Means, to the Superintendent of State Police asking that they look at this during the interim might be as effective as an interim study and might get you the kind of proposal that you're looking for.
Well, we can include that, I guess, in our letter. Copy. Because, you know, we would certainly want their advice and their opinion. In fact, I think the AG also. And then probably the district attorneys and probably the police chiefs association. So there's a list of people that ought to be included to be brought around. But I'd really, it were looked at with some time. And I know your problem, but then the last time we had the Commerce Department budget, we didn't get from the department this problem brought forward, and that was in February. So it's the end of May, to expect us to enact substantive legislation that would really properly be in the Judiciary Committee's jurisdiction, I'm just not comfortable in doing. Rather leave the law like it is. Rather increase the fees to what you say the program costs. And so let that just sort of stand, and then I'll see. Probably Paul Romaine will be by to see me, I guess.
Maybe we could get to
but.
Senator Frey and Senator Hannon and me together on finding a bill that's already in the Judiciary Committee that we could gut and stuff to get something going on these issues.
If you want to do it that quickly.
But I'm not suggesting that we change what we would do otherwise on this bill, but maybe that's something we could do on the side. I don't know if we can get it done or not.
If it's possible, and then the side you could go ahead and amend this, I suppose.
Could I add one other comment for you to consider? I appreciate that I sensed that you reached a conclusion of your deliberations. There's one other small point. We have tried throughout this, developing this statute process, to keep the focus of this department on what I mentioned to you yesterday. And I have a slight bias towards not including programs that detract from that focus on insurance, workers' comp, and the banking industry. And I recognize that as a small loan program, the pawnbrokers fit. But the minute the justification turns to criminal justice, I think it detracts from the important mission that brings me here today.
But we all have distractions on our ways through life, you know? And I'd like to have a clear sense that my mission is to chair a Ways and Means Subcommittee and try to deal with just budget and fiscal matters. And darn it, policy issues don't keep coming in. And so you just learn, Stan, to deal with these little lumps and bumps that life gives you.
Well, I feel better having said it.
Okay. I understand. And we'd fix it. Just maybe not so fast as you'd like. Thank you. Now, you probably had some other things to talk about.
So you're going to be back a long way.
I'd like to leave it like it is, have them double it, and then I'm sure I'm going to get lobbied, but go ahead. If you can get something done, do it.
But as far as this bill, I'm just trying to be sure I understand. You're going to keep the law the way it's currently in the gray book.
Until there's some substitute.
Representative Jones?
Then we have to amend the
Well, yeah, we'd have to amend the Amendment Act.
Mr. Chairman, there's a repealing language here. We just take that out.
Yeah.
All of the 726 statute.
Right at the end of the bill. Section 85. There's a, I guess on line 22, all those, and then on 23, those references to ORS 726, that you would delete those. Delete those numbers from that section.
Right.
So that would be on line 22, 726.040, and then continue through on line 23 through 726.910. Mm-hmm. And so we do that. And then if someone has this a different solution, that's not, doesn't have to be fixed in this bill, right?
Right.
That'd be the last passed. Mm-hmm. Okay.
One little footnote to that. I just, I don't know what's going to happen. I heard suggestions this morning, and the Commerce Bill is being heard over on the Senate side this afternoon. Various people are suggesting that another program be included in this department of some greater size, and that is the securities registration program being part of FIT. I just want to alert you to that. We are not proposing that. I'm just letting you know that the Senate is hearing that question right now. If that happens, I'm not sure how that relates, but I intended only to let you know that I'm aware that that's going on. We're just watching that. Our position is what's in the bill now, but it may be that the Senate Substitute Committee will make this a little more complex before we're done.
Goody.
Yeah, I'm looking here.
No, we may not be here. Yeah, because I mean, that's not as important as this bill, right? What the Senate does.
I'm not going to respond to that.
No. Anyway.
If I could turn now to two other points, and then I want to turn the microphone over to other people to give you the more normal budget presentation. When we had our chart up yesterday, and I guess we don't, I just wanted to identify for you that we are keeping the Accident Prevention Division, or we propose to keep the Accident Prevention Division separate. And the reasons for that, because you might, you know, start looking at that and say, well, why is there workers' comp and then why APD? In the workers' comp programs that are working their way through this process, there's a lot of concern about what that division does and how well it does it and what it needs and so forth. In the governor's proposals or urgings with respect to workers' comp, that has a pretty high priority for us. One way to underscore that was to keep it as a separate division, move what's there now intact, and then sort of await mm-hmm. the rest of the deliberations and whatever else the legislative body does, I think could fit in easier if it's kept separate that way. There, in the process we were developing this, some people suggested that Accident Prevention Division ought to be, in effect, merged with the rest of workers' comp and not given some kind of separate status. We prefer to have it separate as a matter of emphasis and ease of responding to what else you do. Okay?
I would agree.
On the issue of, on the same kind of issue, picking up on the chair's observation earlier about this committee's history, when you're given this budget detail, you'll see some heavy increases, percentage-wise, not dollar-wise, for licensed insurance salespeople. And we're proposing an increase for new licenses and for renewal. That additional revenue, we hope, is going to go to the enhanced program that will be called for by legislation that's now pending. Why we think it's appropriate for you to take that up is I think there's a way, perhaps, to accomplish everything that everybody's interest needs to have served. First, the insurance division right now needs a fee increase. Contrary to the belief of the former insurance commissioner, I read the statute, and I went back and had staff listen to the tapes. I read the statute as requiring the approval of the legislative review authority to increase fees. I understand, and I believe that means Ways and Means, by whatever process Ways and Means chooses to operate. So we've been aware that they need a fee increase, if we didn't have this bill right now, of a certain level. I felt it better to give you the whole budget presentation, since we were within a month or so of doing that, as opposed to asking you for a fee increase in isolation without hearing all the rest of it. I would hope that you would act on that as when you can, without regard to this, that Ways and Means will respond to that request that's part of this budget, because we need the funds now. You could grant the full requested increase, or that portion of it that you think is justified, but not give us the expenditure limitation to go with it until you see what happens with the subsidy legislation. That would leave you in control, not require us to do two budgets, respond to the present situation.
That's what you were talking about.
And I just make that as a suggestion with the explanation about why it's coming to you in this way. And with that, what I'd like to do is have Mary Alice Hammond, who works in my office, and Joan Hader present the more detailed portion of the budget, unless you have questions about philosophy or approach or the things we covered.
Well, just to follow up on what you said, I think the subcommittee would be willing to go ahead, give you an appropriation, but unschedule it pending deliberations of the body, because we need to know what the exact duties are going to be before we go ahead and finally fund them, but to make the appropriation unscheduled. And then, I don't know about the fee increase, well,
Mr.
Senator Hannon.
Are the fees going to be in this bill, or are they going to be in the budget bill?
They're something we can do, I think.
I didn't see any fees. They allude to the fees and what they shall be, but they don't list any dollar amounts.
I'll let Joan Hader respond.
Mr. Chairman, Joan Hader. How the law is set up is that the you folks can determine what the fees should be, and we put that in the budget report, and then that becomes the fee unless it's changed by an emergency board meeting or you at a later date.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Mary Alice. I might say to you, by way of introduction, Mary Alice worked on the committee that we assembled. I borrowed her from the Board of Accountancy, where she's been the administrator, to work on the analysis of the Financial Institutions Division that I mentioned to you when I was here a couple months ago, and I thought that might be an interesting perspective for you to have as you consider this budget.
Good. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mary Alice Hammond. As Stan mentioned, I did serve on the task force that was appointed subsequent to your last review of the financial institution's budget. As you probably recall, when that budget came up for discussion, the department had just learned that the division was going to be about $1 million short of having enough revenue to sustain the governor's recommended budget. So the charge of the task force was to look at the division and try to come up with some recommendations for what ought to happen. I believe all of you earlier received copies of the task force recommendations. The report was accepted by the director. Not all of the recommendations necessarily were accepted by Mr. Long. The conclusion that the task force came to is that for the Financial Institutions Division to remain a freestanding agency could only be a short-term solution, that over the long term, this agency needs some help from some quarter. And with the creation of the Department of Insurance and Finance, the agency will be able to reduce its overhead by virtue of being a smaller fish in a relatively larger pond, and reduce its expenses so that it can come in within the revenue that's proposed. The dilemma that the department faces is that the asset base of the institutions that generate the fees to support the department has been eroding. There have been mergers, there have been bank failures, there have been acquisitions. All of that decreases the asset base and consequently decreases the amount of revenue available to the division to support its functions. Some of the problems that the task force identified that had led to the place that we find ourselves in at this point were a lack of management direction in the past and a belief that the administrator of the division doesn't have line authority over what goes on in that division. Can't recall now, I've been in so many committees in the last 2 days, whether it was in this committee or in the other one that you alluded to, the problems created by the development of the financial institutions division and all the layers of management. But by being in the Department of Insurance and Finance, the overhead of the higher level positions will be shared and there'll be less overhead within the division. One of the options, I suppose, would be to say that if the division can't support itself, that eventually it would just fade out and that there wouldn't be any state chartered institutions. I think there are, and the task force came to the conclusion that there are benefits to state chartered institutions because they allow options for consumers and for business people. They allow financial institutions to be available in communities which would not otherwise have financial institutions because it wouldn't be profitable for a national bank, for example, to have a branch in Burns or someplace like that. The budget that was prepared based on the recommendations of the task force does a number of things. It removes middle management and also cuts down on the number of examiners. I know that there's concern in this committee about whether the number of examiners remaining will be sufficient to do what the division is charged with doing, and that is to examine the safety and soundness of the institutions. And to give you a real honest answer to that question, we're not absolutely certain, but we think so. One of the difficulties in doing this is that there was no management information available to tell us how many hours it takes to do an examination of a certain size institution. So we were unable to say with any certainty that you need X number of examiners to examine this many institutions with this kind of an asset base. So what we did was, using the best information available, come up with a proposal that we believe will get the job done.
We can double the savings and loans fees because he just left.
Right. Oh, we're going to raise those then at this point.
Right. Is that what
we're
going to do?
Okay. The one of the real difficulties, so long as we're talking about fees, one of the problems with this whole situation is that if you raise the fees too high, you're going to drive these institutions to federal charters. And then you've only exacerbated the problem because you have then less of an asset base from which to draw revenue. So there's a fine balancing act that goes on here to try to set the fees at a rate that will support the examinations and yet at the same time keep the institutions at state chartered. Some of the other recommendations of the task force included making the state charters more attractive, and there's other legislation before this session of the legislature that does things like allow banks to sell insurance and some of those kinds of things that can make the state chartered institutions more competitive, but that's not an issue before this committee.
Can't double the bank's fees. The bank's locked in.
Well, we could double the bank's fees and take care of the pawnbrokers. Did Mr. Bronner leave?
No, Bronner's in. Barrows is out, so we can, depending on.
No, now I'm in serious trouble.
They're taking turns hyperventilating hallway.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
Has somebody found a difference?
If you have any questions before we get into the actual figures, any questions about the task force recommendations?
What's the organization structure going to look like? That's already been brought to my attention, some concern that there'll be expertise in savings and loans as well as expertise in banks.
Yeah, I've met with the industry since this budget has been developed, and I think there's a flowchart. I have met with the industries myself,
yeah,
and asked them to take a deep breath and go along with not each one having their own person in exchange for having a deputy that would be technically trained and competent to supervise and do supervising. My impression of those conversations has been that with reluctance, the industries will hold their nose and go along. That doesn't say they're not concerned, but I think everybody can't have their own person
have a declining asset base and not have fee increases. I mean, we just can't do all those things alone. And frankly,
can you draw me a little chart of how that would work?
If you look in the
FID, it's in here?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If you'll look, tab E, the fourth
tab
page.
E. Ah.
And I've gone over this, I think, with everybody that represents one of those industries, and I don't think they're going to come in and lay down in front of us.
Here's the constituents you're at trucks.
These are the people we knocked out.
Yeah.
Jeez. It's like an Exocet missile.
Mine doesn't have red marks.
No, it's mine.
Mr. Chairman, then this is the financial institutions report. I just went through and marked that. We disappeared to get you to.
I wasn't going to leave any evidence.
To get you in.
There's the blood.
There is a trail to this.
Okay. All right, so you'll leave a deputy who supervising examiners?
Yes. If you see that supervising examiner, if I were using technical language from administrator, I'd call them lead workers is what
yeah.
they really are.
Sergeants.
Uh-huh. They're just two teams. They're not two different teams. They're just two teams.
I see. So it's not like savings and loan and credit unions in one end and banks on the other end. They're teams.
Right.
So that's why having a deputy and an administrator allows you to have expertise in both of those fields.
Totally.
But we're not sure how different they are because Mr. Bronner and Mr. Barrows keep interchanging themselves in the room. So you begin to wonder maybe they're not so different.
Can I borrow that argument if I
you
do?
Could try it. Because really, they each are trusting the other to look out for the other's interests. It's very unusual.
I like that argument. I'm going to
yeah.
quote you on that if you bring it up.
That's fine.
The only other argument to that that I've asked Mr. Long is that as you use these auditors, then you're also going to be using them as you're indicating yesterday in the insurance industry as well.
We're going to try.
My concern as a member of the bar, would you want a corporate attorney using his expertise and knowledge defending a convicted felon in a court? Using the same analogy on the auditor, would you want the auditor that's trained in financial services, maybe dealing with insurance companies, maybe they don't have expertise or knowledge to discover what the problems are?
If you push that down, when I'm not here, tend to try a couple different kinds of cases. Civil rights cases for one, and commercial litigation for two, and they are very different and they seem different. I use the same paralegal help with both cases. Now, it could be two different trial lawyers, it just so happens that I know about those two things, but my paralegal can do work for every kind of litigation that's in my firm. And so if you look down here at examiner trainee, that's maybe where you're going to see some overlap. At least we're going to experiment with it, where you take somebody who can count cash and reconcile books and so forth, and if you need them over in the insurance side, you'll take them over there for 3 days for some process, pay for them, and send them back. You know, and if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, we didn't know till we tried it. I don't think you'd send a senior examiner out of this program over to look at an insurance company unless it was some real narrow, specialized kind of a problem. But it's the paralegal help that I think is that we ought to really look at cross-training those people.
Well, that's fine. I can understand down at the examiner trainee level, but some of your other auditors or examiners,
I don't think it would be
too effective. And then are we just shuffling people back and forth and not really achieving what we think we're achieving?
What happens is, in the insurance rate business, for example, we don't know when filing is going to be made. And when it is, we may want to move on it quickly. So suppose when you turn around and look at this division of this new department, you can see that you're in between exams or something. I think it's good management to be able to borrow some of those. I use counting cash as an example. It really isn't that important. But somebody with the skills over here could probably help out temporarily. Maybe that says more than, or sounds like more than I mean it to be. But I believe, personally, as a manager, in trying to cross-train people and trying to give people opportunities for lateral and upward mobility in their careers, and I think that there's enough similarity in work that we can do a better, quicker job if our people have it in their minds that they may be called on to work down the hall as well as at their desk. I know that lawyers certainly do that. I have pressed more than one lawyer into service when the need was there. I didn't care if they were a corporation lawyer. If I needed them, that was better than nobody.
Yeah, and I hope you don't feel like that, certainly trying to put you down with that. I'm just trying to find out if those people are going to be adequately trained. Let me ask you this, on the examining end, are they going to be used in the examining end of financial institutions, but as they move over, are they going to be involved in that rate case? Under filing use, they just come in and file their rates and then are in essence charging that rate. Workers' comp, and so we'd have all these additional functions added in to that, as I understand, in addition to other insurance companies.
What I hope happens, and why we have, I can't remember, is it 14 or 15, 14 new staff people in the insurance division. What I hope happens is the legislature will see fit to create a public hearing process for insurance company rates. I don't want to use, examples maybe confuse thinking. Not unlike the PUC process or not unlike the classic administrative law process. I would rather see, I think, serious consideration given, and I believe it's in bills now. I haven't personally tracked those. The commissioner's office has. So that when a carrier proposes to increase, they make filings on our forms, and we then have the right to examine books, rate of return concepts and so forth under a broad standard, public convenience and necessity or whatever you see fit, and that the carriers pay that cost, pay for that hearing process, and as a result of it, the commissioner makes a determination as to what rate's going to be permitted.
This is on the usury rates you're talking about in banks?
No, I'm talking about on the insurance side.
Oh, on insurance.
And then what happens is, we don't know exactly when that's going to occur or what needs, what need we're going to have. And I just think that there's a small fringe benefit here of having both these programs in the same department, so we can call on this expertise, if it's available, to help with that process. Because as you know, many carriers are multi-state, multi-million, sometimes billions in assets, and have actuaries and lawyers and accountants of their own, and we're going to have to run to keep up. And this is a good, strong department with a lot of capacity as a whole.
Okay, so do we get the numbers for bid?
Starting on page 4 in section C. Or it starts on page 3, at the bottom of the page. You start out with the governor's printed budget, which was a little over $4 million and 41 FTE. And from that, you take out the task force adjustments, the positions that were recommended to be deleted, and services and supplies, and then you add back in the bank examiner's three, and you'll bank examiner three positions, and you'll notice it says leave one vacant. The task force's belief and the belief of the people involved in the credit union industry is that there will be some growth in that area. One of the problems in the past that led to the difficulty that financial institutions was in was an overly optimistic projection about what was going to happen in the future. So the task force chose not to rely on any kind of growth figures in these areas, choosing instead to come up with a budget that we knew would not require another mid-biennium layoff or another mid-biennium cutback. I mean, we can count on this revenue coming in. If, in fact, there's the kind of growth in the credit union area that we believe will occur, we'd like to have the position and the limitation, but not fill it unless there is that growth in the credit unions. There are other...
Put that on the wish list.
That's a little bit unusual. It's not unusual for you to leave an FTE unfunded in an agency, and then if they come up with the revenue, they come back to you and you have a chance to look at it, but to leave both the FTE and the expenditure authority is a bit different than what you would normally do.
We try to bring variety to you.
I do appreciate that.
Each time to come.
I appreciate these little offerings. It makes us feel like we're doing something important.
Well, I guess in return, it's a little unusual to cut one fourth of your staff as well. So we thought we'd throw that in.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, the comparison here with FTE on page 3, we don't have a comparison. Could you tell us just roughly how many you're deleting from the positions? You got 41.
Representative Jones, the total appears on the next page.